This is a heartbreaking story. More than half of the world's 57 million primary school-aged children who are out of school live in countries damaged by war and conflict and are denied the right to an education. Hello, I'm Rekhaya Najjar, and you're listening to the extended version of The Heat, the Producers Podcast. In countries such as Syria, Pakistan, and the Democratic Republic of Congo, tens of thousands of schools have been attacked or are occupied by armed forces. Conflicts, fighting, and displacement heighten the risk that children caught up in these crises will never go to school or will drop out. Alice Albright is the CEO of Global Partnership for Education, an organization dedicated to providing good, quality education to children and prioritizing the poorest and most vulnerable. Alice, thank you so much for being with me today.
Thank you so much for having me.
There is something like 28.5 million children in conflict zones who are currently being denied education. I mean, I'm just looking at Syria, where 1 million children have fled the fighting, 4,000 schools have closed. Alice, are we looking at another lost generation?
We absolutely are. And the problem that we have there is that, of course, there's the conflict. But of course, what we see is with education in these conflict states is that as much as it's important to pay attention to some other humanitarian issues, education suffers every much as everything else. So yes, it's a critical issue, and we're very worried about what's happening in Syria. Some of the surrounding countries have been very generous in offering their own schooling systems, but that's not necessarily a sustainable solution.
Okay, so let's take a look at your organization, the Global Partnership for Education. I mean, you've been working in these affected countries, and what is it that you're seeing when it comes to things like literacy rates or gender disparities with children being denied an education?
Well, literacy and gender issues are problems within education writ large, so we see those globally. They are worse in countries of conflict. So we see the literacy rates drop off very quickly, and marginalized parts of those countries, and girls are very much part of that, are denied the right to go to school. So the challenges that we see elsewhere are prevalent in an even stronger way in those countries.
Are we actually seeing schools being targeted in places like Syria and Mali?
Well, we have. We've seen, you know, with the recent events in Nigeria, we saw with Malala in Pakistan that girls going to school are targeted. We also see that militias take over schools. So families don't send their children to school, obviously. Teachers flee, and schools actually become part of what's being used to wage the battles.
Since you mentioned Nigeria, you know, there's a group there, Boko Haram, an insurgency that's been operating in like 5 states in the northern part of the country. And Boko Haram translates literally into Western education is forbidden. We just read that this group has gained some new notoriety, and they're targeting girls in the area. They recently kidnapped over 100 girls a couple of weeks ago, and many of them are still being held captive. I mean, how does a group like yours, or any organization for that matter, overcome this kind of extremism in a place like Nigeria?
Well, you need to continue to have strong advocacy locally and work with the governments and many governments that we work with understand the importance of education. Education is not a one-off thing. Education is an investment in a society's future. And, you know, children who are educated grow up to be people who educate their own children, take care of their children, send their own children to school, get better jobs, etc. So it starts with a huge advocacy effort locally to galvanize the political will to get the government to pay attention to educating their kids year in, year out. And many of our government partners understand that, so we're actually very encouraged by the progress in many countries. But Nigeria is a challenge, and we need to work very closely with that government to continue to have them and the states prioritize education.
And the other problem I would think you face in some countries are the cultural/religious values that mitigate against girls being educated. For instance, in Pakistan, where girls are not just targeted by radical groups, but they face opposition from their parents, especially their fathers, right?
Well, you do see that. There's no doubt about it. But I also think we're beginning to see some real progress in Pakistan. I was in Islamabad about 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago or so, and met with the government, as well as I met with, towards the end of the day, 2,000 girls who are actually successfully going through school and are very optimistic about their futures. And I'm very impressed with what they've been able to accomplish in terms of being able to get through school.
So when you talk about progress, I mean, you mentioned Malala Yousafzai, and I spoke with a young girl, Humaira Bashal, a young woman, I should say. and who couldn't join us, but I did get to hear about her story. And she wanted to go to school. Her mother wanted her to go to school. Her father was adamantly against it. I mean, just hands down. And it wasn't because he didn't want her to learn. It was because he feared for her life, that she would be targeted by one of these radical groups and he would lose his daughter. It got so bad that, you know, her mother and her father got into a fight. Her mother ended up breaking a hand. The fight was so bad. But she ended up going to school, learning, and now she's formed a team with other young girls in the area. And are you seeing a lot more of these types of stories that leave you optimistic that attitudes are changing?
Yes. I mean, there's no doubt that we have huge challenges here. So let's not, you know, put on rosy colored glasses. But there are some things that give me optimism. First of all, let's look at the Malala situation. She's a remarkably brave young woman. So is Humaira. They have the will to stand up against the odds and really continue to fight for the right to education. And we need to do everything we can to applaud them. The world has risen up to really recognize the challenge and the plight of Malala. And in fact, she had two friends with her who were also shot, who I've also met. I've met all three of them. We need to do everything we can to support them. It's hard for people in that village who didn't know about education, it's hard to blame them for not knowing what education is, because they haven't been educated themselves. But then once, and this is where the role of civil society is so important, once they begin to see the value of education, sending their kids to school that they will then count, they will read, I think that there's a lot that we can do to convince local villagers to become supportive. So I think that rather than getting overly frustrated about some of the cultural issues, the question is, how do we begin to work with people to begin to break them down a little bit? So I am optimistic, because when we begin to do that, you do begin to see progress.
So the work that your organization does, I mean, the other thing that you require is, of course, money. Are you getting the money and support from governments or from international organizations to make your program work in these areas?
Well, thank you for asking that. It's a huge problem that we have right now. We are in a replenishment road right now, which for us means recapitalization. We're looking to raise $3.5 billion from the international community. So it's a very top-of-mind topic for us right now. But let me just give you some basic facts. Education is hugely important in the development world, and it's actually essential to every other good outcome that we're looking to work with our country partners in development, whether or not it's health or contending with climate change or democracy building or preparedness for the job world. I mean, education is essential to all of those things, so it's absolutely critical. Funding for education is falling. International funding for education has dropped 5% in each of the last 3 years. Education for funding within the humanitarian space is only 1.4% of the total, 1.4%. And there's a number of other indicators that you can look at that show you that education, the investment in education is declining. So we need to reverse that. So our upcoming replenishment conference, which is Brussels at the end of June, June 26th, is an opportunity for the international community to come together and say, we're not going to stand for this any longer. We need to reinvest in education and amass the resources that we need to help our partners invest. Now, another thing that we're doing, which is critical, is that we are seeking commitments from our developing country partners to invest their own money in education, which is essential. It's a very strong part of our overall business model.
All the best with that, Alice. I hope you can keep having this conversation. Be sure to tune into Alice's interview with Anna Naidu this Friday on The Heat, 7 a.m. Beijing, 7 p.m. Eastern.